This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. The international break begins. England have two interesting looking games, Brazil and Belgium, and some interesting dilemmas for Gareth Southgate to muse and the rest of us to froth over. Kobbie Mainoo makes the squad. Has he got time to become the holding midfielder we desperately need? Should Gareth just use this season's stats to pick the team? And who else on the fringes is this week big for? We'll discuss Ben White, the right fragrances for an England hotel, and a woke football kit that seems to have upset some very reasonable people. The playoffs for the final places begin tonight. We'll focus on Wales and try to work out who else will make it through. And then Josh Widdicombe joins us to discuss his new podcast with Dara O'Brien about Ali Dyer. There's Barry's political lookalikes, people dreaming about the pod, a nostalgic quiz, your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Johnny Liu, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm really good. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. What were you laughing at? I sound like a teacher. What are you smirking at in the intro?
Oh, well, I was the Barry lookalike, the political lookalikes bit. I just clicked who you were referring to.
Oh, there are more than one. We've been sent many. Ben Fisher is here.
Hi, Max. How are you doing?
And Fraser says, did Barry have a nice time in the winner's enclosure at Cheltenham with Sir Alex Ferguson, Big Sam and Tyrone from Coronation Street? How was your week, Barry?
My week at Cheltenham was everything I expected it to be, Max. I did actually see Big Sam and Sir Alex in the winner's enclosure. I was standing Sir Alex adjacent as he welcomed home his first winner at the festival after I don't know how many years, and then 40 minutes later he welcomed home his second. So money follows money, Max.
It's true. In Fergie time, the second horse clearly won his race, didn't he? Anyway, let's start with England. They placed Brazil on Saturday night at 7 o'clock, Belgium on Tuesday.
Oh, sorry, actually, Max. Yes.
No, don't apologise.
I watched the Gold Cup with Harry Redknapp. Redknapp's company, yes.
All right.
Okay. And a couple of races before the Gold Cup, his horse, he'd had a winner the same day as Fergie, and then the next day his horse, the Jukebox Man, which I think was a 25 to 1 outsider, which I had money on, looked all over a winner, jumping the last, nothing near it, and it got collared on the line. So Harry and I watched the Gold Cup together, and both of us were in a very bad mood because the Jukebox Man.
Just the two of you next to each other?
The two of us and Gary Cotterill from Sky Sports.
All right, okay. Wow.
So I was in exalted company.
You were. Was Gary reporting on deadline day, or was he allowed the afternoon?
No, I think he'd been sent along to interview Harry after his winner the previous day. That's what they were doing anyway, because they went scuttled off to a room,
right,
to do an interview.
Did you win? Did you win any money?
No, I didn't really bet much, to be honest. I think about three bets, one winner, that one was second, and one nowhere.
All right. Should we get on with England? Kobbie Mainoo.
Yeah, we probably should.
Kobbie Mainoo getting into the squad. This is good, isn't it, Johnny? I mean, Southgate gets criticised for not doing this kind of thing.
I think it's good because he's a fantastic talent, albeit a largely unproven talent. You know, we don't know how, you know, he's going to deal with lots of different situations, and this is a perfect fixture to test him in. Elite opposition, you know, Wembley Stadium, you know, kind of the run-up to a tournament, so everyone's kind of slightly on edge, and they're hoping to kind of, you know, get things to gel, and clearly there is a problem in that midfield. You know, we know who two of those midfielders are in that three, Rice and Bellingham, but we, you know, I think Southgate is basically looking for a way not to have to pick Jordan Henderson or Calvin Phillips. You know, we joke about his loyalty to them, but, you know, anyone who knows ball, as they say, will know that Henderson's not the player he was, that Phillips is certainly not the player he looked like he was capable of being. And so there is a bit of a void in there. You know, you need someone who can take the ball under pressure, but also someone who can kind of build attacks from nothing against static defences. And Mainoo, who has been you know, I've really enjoyed watching him for United this season. Just it's not just what he does on the ball, not just, you know, kind of the goals and the little flourishes around the area, but the way he tracks back, the way he gets into position, the way he really strives to win it back, and his discipline off the ball. I think he's a real player, and I hope he gets like some decent minutes. I hope it's not like sort of 20 minutes when all the air's gone out of the game. I want to see him get a decent chunk.
Yes, I was going to say you can just see, you know, him coming on for Henderson in the 88th minute of both games, and then be like, oh. I was looking at I think Ben McClear in the Guardian did a piece about if the England team was picked purely on stats, right, then the midfield would be Maddison, Rice, and Bellingham. But like, in everybody's mind, that is too attacking, right? Rice is better when Jorginho's next to him, for example, for Arsenal. Could you possibly play Maddison, Rice, and Bellingham? It sounds so exciting, but it's probably a bad idea. And so you do need somebody who is a six, or at least more of a six than any of those three.
I mean, it's okay against weaker opposition, unless you know, as long as you have strategies for stopping the counter, right? You bring your fullbacks into a slightly more central position, and you know, when you have the ball, so you don't get countered. It's not, you know, people think that, you know, having three attacking midfielders, or, you know, having two attacking midfielders out of three is kind of, you know, it's a death sentence. But if you can plan around that, if that's clearly where your strengths lie, then you can work the rest of the team. You know, you can fiddle with a few things, and it doesn't necessarily kill you if you are smart about it.
The question is, I guess, is if you look at England's central defence or defence, Ben, where there are potential issues at left back, potential issues at centre back, that makes you think like you do need a sensible midfield, right?
Yeah, because I mean, centre half is definitely the area that scares me the most with my sort of England head on. And therefore, yeah, you need some kind of form of protection in front of there. I think Rice can obviously play deeper, but as we've seen for Arsenal and for England, you know, he offers so much kind of attacking, penetrating, going the other way. Obviously, Bellingham is very much playing at the tip of that midfield as well. And I think Maynou will obviously provide an energy, a much-needed energy, really, that obviously Henderson, even an informed Phillips, probably isn't quite matching. And as Johnny said, you know, it's a problem position for England. It's probably that and centre-half are probably the two main concerns going into the tournament. If Maynou can play anywhere near like he has done and show this kind of same composure as he has done for Manchester United, then could be a really big, a really sort of welcome headache kind of solve really for Southgate, because, I think that central, that spine, I must admit, even Pickford's form for Everton and England, still, I think that spine is still, I don't know, probably the weaker form of the England team.
They just have so many good players. Ireland would kill for half of them. And we'd squeeze any of them into our team, even if we had to play James Maddison in goals. It's the classic thing, you know, if lots of them are going to have to be left out, and people will get upset about that. But what the midfield three will be, in your opinion, assuming everyone's fit?
Well, I mean, that's the point, isn't it? That Bellingham and Rice will be two of them. I suspect at the moment Henderson would be the other one, but I don't know, Johnny, if you think different. And you know, if he is, I just almost won't be able to handle the uproar before the game's even started. You know, like, I mean, I don't think he's playing at the level. I mean, he didn't play, you know, Villa hammered Ajax. That's the only time I've seen him this season. So perhaps it's wrong to judge, but he doesn't appear to be at the level, but I suspect that's what Southgate will do. Johnny, who else do you think this you know, week is huge for? Because, you know, it's the fringe players who ultimately probably won't play that many minutes in the tournament, like Anthony Gordon, Ivan Toney, etc. Who could this be big for?
I don't know. Who's in the squad? I'm not really following it. Obviously Rashford. I mean, obviously. Obviously, it's a huge week for Marcus Rashford. And again, it depends to a large extent on the amount of minutes he can get. But I think he would probably consider himself slightly lucky to get into this squad, given the season that he's had. And clearly, there's still a little bit of trust there, a little bit of belief on Southgate's part. And Rashford kind of has to, you know, he has to fulfil that, because there is so much competition for that spot. I think if you asked a lot of England fans, they would say Foden, Phil Foden's probably a better bet on that left flank. So yeah, I mean, it's a huge week for him, you know, because if he can still do it, if he can still offer something at international level, it doesn't necessarily matter that he's not really ripping up for Manchester United. Southgate has shown that in the past.
Is it conceivable? Obviously, Jack Grealish is not fit at the moment. But he's not having a good season. Marcus Rashford is not having a good season. Is it conceivable one or both of them could be left out and maybe Anthony Gordon sneaks into the squad?
I think I'd probably, out of the two, weirdly, I probably would be more concerned for Grealish than Rashford. I think Rashford for England has performed, especially for Southgate. I don't know, he's had big moments. I think Grealish, he's just had a really difficult season, obviously, for Manchester City. You know, Cole Palmer, who obviously left City for Chelsea, looks like he's in a really good place. Foden, obviously, is on that left, basically instead of him. I'd be a little bit concerned for Grealish, and especially we know before there was obviously the huge clamour for Southgate to include Grealish, ditto with Maddison, and obviously he did. But I don't know, I don't feel like we've seen anywhere near the best of Grealish for quite some time. And I think out of the two, Rashford, Southgate may come down on Rashford's side. Just in terms of what he has delivered for him.
The Ben White story is interesting. Harry Redknapp, your new friend, Barry, was on TalkSport saying they should slam the door in his face. The first comment below the video saying, how can you slam the door in the face of someone who has just slammed the door in your face? The door is now closed. In the Telegraph, it was reported that what happened in Qatar was a falling out with Steve Holland. It started at the base at the World Cup in November of last year in a conversation between Holland and Ben White in front of other members of the squad. It was described by sources as having begun when Holland asked Kyle Walker a question relating to Manchester City's performance in the previous season. When he asked the same of White relating to Arsenal, the 26-year-old said he didn't know the answer, and it's claimed that Holland responded by saying that that was because White was not sufficiently interested in football. It was that moment that ultimately led to the player asking to come home on November the 30th. We don't know how much of that is accurate, Johnny. But it doesn't matter if Ben White is interested enough in football, if he's playing really well. It seems odd that Steve Holland would yell at him in front of the players. Obviously, there's a lot of supposition here. But if he doesn't want to play, then he doesn't want to play, right?
It's one of those where, I think this incident is, there's been a lot of talk. A lot of rumours, everyone kind of heard things about what happened in Qatar with Steve Holland. I think it's one of those episodes that's been given, because everyone now fixates on this, it's been given a lot more explanatory power than it probably deserves. The fact is, going on England camps and not playing is not very fun. The money isn't great compared to, what you're earning for your club. The scrutiny is off the scale, and at some point, clearly Ben White has thought, "Well, I don't want to do this anymore." I think it's perfectly reasonable, and it's interesting, that I live in Germany, and Toni Kroos has just come back, and Toni Kroos, obviously, he decided to step back after the last Euros, and nobody begrudged him that. Nobody called him a traitor and said, this guy should be, we should slam the door in Toni Kroos's face. Where is this guy's patriotism? And obviously
Douglas Bader didn't, he would be furious, etc. Yeah.
Yeah. And now, the door was always left open, and Nagelsmann gave him a call, and now he's back for the home Euros. I think it's this really outdated view that international football should be the be all and end all, and that you need to want to bleed for your country. And I think for the next generation, certainly it's not that way. It's like, what are you doing for me as well? And why shouldn't it be?
Gareth Southgate insists that White's absence from the squad is not because of a row he had with Steve Holland. But what little evidence we have suggests his absence from the squad is to do with a row he had with Steve Holland. And if it is, it seems like a bit of a dumb route to have had. And I would sort of say it's not great leadership by Steve Holland, because we know Ben White isn't that interested in football. He just happens to be very good at it. And he gives his all when he's playing. There's no question about that. But if he's not particularly interested in all the football stuff that's going around, he's not a proper football man, then allowances should be made for that because, as I say, he's very good at it.
Speaking of people who would run through brick walls to play for England if they were good enough, this from The Express, Barry, which you pointed in my direction. Outraged MPs are leading the backlash against Nike in England today after the new 2024 kit was accused of being woke. It's a kit. Anyway, Nike said the new kits will celebrate football heroes of the past with a modern twist. The St. George's Cross on the collar has been given, quote, a playful update to unite and inspire. The traditional red cross has now been replaced with a multicoloured cross. While the vertical line remains red, the horizontal line has instead been redesigned with navy blue, light blue and pink. Reform UK MP Lee Anderson said, "The left have a nerve to ask me why I want my country back. This virtue-signalling, namby-pamby, pearl-clutching woke nonsense must stop. Any more of this and I'll be on the first flight to Rwanda. May I suggest more of this very quickly, please?" Tory MP Brennan Clarke-Smith said the design looked nothing like our flag. The plain-speaking patriot fumed, "Maybe somebody in the design department misheard three lines and instead went for the three lines on a shirt." Baz, thoughts?
I don't have any thought. Lee Anderson buggers off to Rwanda. I think the United Kingdom would be a much better place without him. Didn't he get outraged about something at the World Cup and said he wasn't going to watch any England game? So
this was the Euros, taking the knee. He said he wouldn't watch them. And then they went and reached the final and he still wasn't allowed to watch them.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, he's a terrible man. Terrible, terrible man.
Also, wasn't the whole thing that there weren't any flights to Rwanda? And that's why he buggered off.
Yeah.
And now he's... There are no flights to Rwanda.
Yes, that's exactly it, isn't it?
That's why the point of view.
He'll be on the first one. Meanwhile, Ben, you drew my attention in nonsense that is happening around England. England will take the scent of St. George's Park with them as they seek European Championship glory in Germany this summer from the Mail. Mail Sport understands that three special fragrances which permeate the air at the team's Burton-on-Trent HQ will be transported to the remote five-star hotel where Gareth Southgate and his players will be based for the duration of their campaign. They'd be just pumped into one plane and then sort of siphoned out of that plane into the hotel.
I've spent time in St. George's Park and I don't remember any discernible scent. I thought it might be the stench of underachievement and failure, but
so the words permeate the air, like fragrances. That what else do fragrances do other than permeate the air?
That's true. I have a real problem with
look busy.
Yeah, I have a trouble with truffle oil. If there was any truffle in it, it sort of makes me gag. So that would really affect my performance. Anyway, the signature scent is likely to feature throughout the main areas of the golf resort Weimaraland, has been described as a fresh, comforting aroma that is distinguishable and lets you know you're in a high-end space. Ooh, okay. Perhaps not this podcast, but other ones would like that one. It features hints of bergamot, lily and jasmine. A second scent will be used in gym and recreation areas, viewed as a more energizing aroma. In the player's bedroom, a more relaxing, sleep-promoting scent thought to contain hints of lavender is to be dispensed. Ben?
I did a piece with Brentford's head of performance, Ben Ryan, the former Rugby Sevens coach, who, I don't know the best way to describe him, but he's, eye on the small details, it's fair to say, at Brentford, obviously a kind of bastion, kind of forward-thinking club. And I got talking to him and he was quietly sort of saying how they have aromas around the training ground. They've kind of introduced these smells around the place, and I think he was obviously reluctant for it to be the thrust of the piece for obvious reasons. He was kind of saying, you know, it's not just us or me just going out to Tesco and buying a load of Glades. But I did quite like the idea that Brentford's, I mean, apparently all these different rooms and the corridors, they all have these different sort of infusions and smells. And he was saying, you know, to elicit higher cognitive thinking. And they want to like make it smell nice so that I'm assuming this is what England are thinking as well, by the way, that they want to make it smell nice so that then they just want to stick around this environment, which I imagine for England is probably way out in the middle of nowhere. And obviously they've had problems with that before. But yeah, Ben at Brentford was saying they had conversations with Vegas hotels and, you know, how to replicate that at Brentford. So everyone's at it.
I'm getting the word Brailsford and not in a good way.
Well, I was just thinking, Lord help our proud boys, if the hotel in any way smells of Germany. We didn't win two world wars to play a Euro somewhere that might have that scent. Goodness. I suspect there'll be more of those kind of stories. God, it's not even the end of March. We've got months of these things until the Euros. Anyway, it'll keep us going, won't it? We're as guilty as anyone.
Yep.
We've been talking about it. Anyway, that'll do for part one. Part two will begin with Wales and their playoff to get to the Euros. Hi Pod fans, Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May the 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. So we've got these qualifiers tonight at the semi-finals. Georgia play Luxembourg and Greece play Kazakhstan. In path C, in path B, Israel, Iceland, Bosnia and Herzegovina against Ukraine. And in path A, Poland, Estonia and Wales, Finland. So, Ben, how do you rate Wales's chances?
Well, they're at home, which I think is a massive thing for them. You know, kind of that'll give them plenty of encouragement, even if they beat Finland tonight, Thursday. They will then be at home against Poland or Estonia again. That's a big thing, big factor, I think. I think there's you know, Wales unusually are the favourites here, I think. They quite like, as we know, being the underdogs so often are the underdogs. I think everybody's expecting them probably to beat Finland and then maybe have a more difficult time against Poland. But, you know, it's unlikely to be as easy as that. They've obviously been here before in the playoffs. They got past Ukraine to reach the World Cup, but that was... History makes it look like it was a great kind of Gareth Bale goal that, you know, typically sent Wales to the World Cup. But, you know, that was a really nervy game. They could have easily lost that game. It was a massively deflected free kick. So I think it's going to be a really tight, cagey game. You'd like to think that that home Wales factor, 12th man and all of that might just help them. But I think it's going to be really tight. Finland, I think they're expecting them to set up to frustrate, hit on the counter. Obviously, Tuomas Puki can still finish. And I suppose my main concern, if anything, is because Rob Page has been saying the last couple of weeks how, you know, these players are in a really good place. They're playing more minutes, more regular game time, making more of an impact at their clubs than ever. But the all four goalkeepers in the squad are just not playing any minutes. Danny Ward is going to start for Wales in goal and hasn't played a club game for about 12 months. He's been playing for the under-23s at Leicester. Page said yesterday, you know, it's not the same. It's not going to be like anything he's faced. So I think that probably is the main concern among Welsh fans because, yeah, you can't just suddenly switch on, I don't think, in terms of the intensity and kind of what he's going to face. But, yeah, and to that end, Finland's captain is the Bayer Leverkusen goalkeeper, Lukas Heredeki, who we know is having a great time. So talk about contrasts. But yeah, don't want to sort of dampen it too much. It's a massive game. You'd like to think Wales can get over the line in Cardiff. Should be a great atmosphere, but I don't think it's going to be easy at all.
It is. It's kind of the post-Bale era, isn't it? Now, Aaron Ramsey is in the squad. There was a bit of contentiousness about his call-up because he hasn't played much this season. I think he's only played about 90 minutes in total since September. And he may not. He probably won't start. But the thing is, they don't need him as much as they used to. But yeah, what Ben was saying about the goalkeepers, the four Wales goalkeepers have one appearance between them this season. That was Adam Davis for Sheffield United against Lincoln City in August in the Carabao Cup. But crucially, he kept a clean sheet. So he is the form goalkeeper.
Right. Well, hopefully they've done some training between now and then, the four of them. I suppose, look, going forward... Ben, they have Dan James, who's in great form. Someone I like to call Player A is, you know, making an impact at Tottenham at the moment. So, you know, they have, you know, they have weapons
Yeah, Rob Page yesterday was saying, you know, they need to bring their A game. Now, all I could think of was player A. Wales, they have weapons, as you say. Dan James, he's going to reach 50 caps if he'll play. Ethan Ampadu at 23 will reach 50 caps, which would be that he'll be the fastest to do that, the fastest Welshman to reach that milestone. So, incredible achievement. And really, as you say, Barry, this is a new era now. It is post-Bell, but it almost feels already post-Ramsey. Ramsey's 33, but has played 23 minutes since September. He's very much on the periphery. Probably a bit of a vibes man for this camp, really, and has been for a little while. I mean, he flew out to Armenia with the team in November, but, you know, was injured. You can't doubt, you know, he obviously loves Wales and, you know, wants to be available, but I'd be amazed if he played any more than a handful of minutes, really, tonight. It's this kind of new era, really. Ampadu, 23, 50 caps, has, you know, been around it since, you know, he trained before Euro 2016 at the age of 15. So he's been around it a long time. And Jordan James, 19-year-old at Birmingham, has made really impressive strides for club and country. So, you know, a 19-year-old and a 23-year-old in midfield, it does feel fresh. It does feel a bit exciting. But obviously, they want to have something to show for it.
The Finland are actually kind of, they're at the opposite end of that cycle, really. There's this sense that it's almost like the kind of a kind of last chance for this team, you know, like Teemu Pukki and Hradecki and Rasmus Schüller as well. Like that, they're coming to the end of the cycle, and there's not necessarily a huge amount coming into, you know, to replace them. So that there is this sense that after they failed to qualify automatically, even though they kind of had an identical record to the qualification group in 2020, which they actually qualified for. After this, you know, a lot of people expect the coach Marco Canova to step down, and there's going to be a big transition period. And the other thing is, like, it's quite interesting to see how this game is going to go down tactically, because these are both teams that are, I think, more comfortable playing without the ball. I mean, like, Finland's last game was in San Marino, and they got given the ball and they had no idea really what to do with it. And I think they won 2-1 in the end.
I actually checked the Wales squad to see if Chris Gunter was still in it, and he isn't, but he has been given a job as vibes man in Rob Page's backroom staff. So it is nice to see that kind of continuity.
Yeah, he's on the coaching staff, yeah.
Oh, I'm pleased, Jim. Nice chap. Luxembourg are just two games away from their first ever major tournament. Paul Watson is going to be with us next week to discuss that and the more minor nations involved in this break. He was in San Marino for their game with St. Kitts and Nevis last night. There was big hopes it would be San Marino's first win for 20-something years. They were 1-0 up, but eventually they lost 3-1. Israel, as I mentioned, play Iceland tonight ahead of this game. The Palestinian FA has written to FIFA and demanded that Congress consider appropriate sanctions against the Israeli Football Association and its clubs because of, quote, unprecedented international human rights and humanitarian law violations in the war on Gaza. The PFA motion has the support of 6 member associations. In the letter, the Palestinian FA wrote that it brings forth a proposal to address the unprecedented international human rights and humanitarian law violations committed by Israel and the complicity manifest in the Israel Football Association's continued inclusion in its national league of football teams located on the territory of another association. They invoke Articles 2, 3, 4 and 5 of the FIFA statutes, citing the governing body's human rights commitment as well as FIFA's human rights policy. The letter argues that the Israeli Football Association is complicit in Israel's government's violation against Palestinian football. Israel's Football Association on Wednesday responded to the petition by saying it had, quote, always followed FIFA regulations and always will. The Republic of Ireland, Barry, have friendlies against Belgium and Switzerland. Blackburn Rovers striker Sammy Smodics hoping to make his debut. The England under 21 boss Lee Carsley has turned down the role of Republic of Ireland manager. Neil Lennon has turned down the job. Chris Coleman has ruled himself out of the job. Does anybody want it?
Neil Lennon turn it down, or did they turn him down? I'm not sure about that.
Oh, a good question. Good question.
I'm not so sure he was offered the job. I'm not sure about Chris Coleman either, but I'm happy to stand corrected if I'm wrong. The Football Association of Ireland at the moment, it has long been a joke. They got rid of John Delaney, who was the main joker in chief, and I think people hoped things would improve, and they haven't. And the guy who's replaced John Delaney seems to be as big, if not bigger, a clown as he was. Yes, John O'Shea has been installed as interim manager or whatever for these two games. They've had months and months to find a replacement for Stephen Kenny. Haven't done it. I can see why Lee Carsley turned down the job. It's not a very attractive proposition. The infrastructure in Ireland is a mess. And I'd be honest, I'd be paying very little attention to these friendlies. I had to check just before we came on who Ireland were even playing because I couldn't remember. That's how disinterested I am. If the FAI aren't interested in them, which they clearly aren't, I'm not sure why they would expect anyone else to be either.
No, doesn't sound ideal. Northern Ireland play Romania and Scotland. Scotland also have a friendly against the Netherlands. So we'll look back at all of those games on Monday. And that'll do for part two. In part three, Josh Widdicombe joins us. He's done a podcast with Dara O'Brien about Ali Dyer and his 53 minutes playing for Southampton. And we'll do that next. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's introduce Guardian Sport uploader and sub/low-level writer 2007 to 2010, Josh Widdicombe. Hey, Josh.
I didn't realise you were going to quote my text verbatim when you asked me what I used to do there. So, yes.
Yeah.
Did he, in his text, tell you that I taught him everything he knows?
That's implicit. That's implicit in the way I live.
Of course it is.
Many's the unhappy hour we whiled away in a dingy office in Ray Street before Josh hit the big time and forgot all about me.
Oh, I'll never forget about you, Baz. I'll never forget about you. I listen to you most weeks, depending on the results of the football.
Right, no, that's fair. Right, you've got a new football podcast out, and the world needs a new football podcast.
I just think there's not enough podcasts.
Yeah, I think you're right.
No, you need to be heard, Josh. We don't see or hear enough about you or from you and your sidekick, Daryl Breen. I mean, every time I turn on my television, at least one of you is on it. And I was like, no, I need more. I need more of this.
Well, the great thing is, obviously, finally me and Dara have been reunited after they tried to kill it by killing Mock the Week. So here we are back discussing what we love, obviously, which is topical football stories, i.e. Ali Jarre in 1996.
Well, that's it. Ali Jarre. And I've been calling him Ali Dyer. And I thought it was Ali Dyer until I listened to episode one, just before this pod, of your new podcast called 53 Minutes, which was the amount of time that Ali Jarre was on the pitch. It's a fascinating story. My first thought, Josh, is if you really aren't a footballer, 53 minutes is a really long time to get away with it, I think.
I think he wasn't a footballer. He was a footballer to a level, which I didn't really know. Like, I think we all know the headlines of the story, which was obviously George Weah phones Graham Souness, says, "My cousin's quite good at football. Do you want to give him a trial?" And Graham Souness plays him. But there was kind of more to it. I didn't realise he had a... he played for Gateshead. He played in Norway. He played for around the semi-professional leagues. And then he just... So it's not like if you or I was to play for Southampton in 1996. Yeah. He was of a level. Graham Souness did say he was very pacey.
Yeah. It's not Lee Mack in Soccer Aid, is it? Like that's not...
No, it's not Lee Mack in Soccer Aid. And I'd say the Southampton team aren't as... They don't talk as much about it as people who do Soccer Aid talk about it.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it is a really... You obviously love the 90s and 90s football, and Quickly Kevin obviously was a great podcast. And so it just feels like, obviously, it couldn't happen now.
No.
And like, that's what's so brilliant about it, is that it happened then, because there wasn't football on TV every minute. We didn't have, like, you know, stats analysts telling us how many times Rodri has looked around every time he's played the game. You know, there's huge holes in our knowledge.
Plymouth Argyle have got a transfer committee. That's the age we're living in now. Do you know what I mean? That in those days, it wasn't like that, obviously. There's lots of checks and balances, obviously, now that would happen. I didn't realise until we did this podcast that No one noticed at the time. In my head, a bit like that kind of Mandela effect thing, I thought this was a big news story that we'd all, it was on Match of the Day that Southampton had been conned and this thing had happened. No one even really clocked it had happened that he had until the following week, a local journalist in Southampton was like, what? Who was this bloke? And kind of asked Graham Souness. And that hadn't, no one else, it hadn't been really mentioned post-match. It hadn't really, it would have just drifted on by if that local journalist hadn't clocked it. Whereas now, obviously, it would be Twitter. It would be, you know, look at the, it's the Kate Middleton situation, isn't it, really now? You can't do anything.
So did who was ringing Graham Souness? Like, what?
No one knows. You've got to presume it was him, right? You've got to presume it was Ali. There's a chance it was George Weah. That's, I suppose, an option.
So the story is that George Weah rings Graham Souness. That's who Graham Souness thinks.
The facts of the matter are, a man phones Graham Souness, says, I'm George Weah, the current World Footballer of the Year. My cousin is looking for a club. Will you give him a trial? Graham Souness gives him a trial, which I think, I'd say at that point, reasonable enough behaviour. I don't think, you know, that's a mistake to do. He's no good really in training, but they're going through an injury crisis. He's one of the named substitutes because they've got no one else. And then Matt Letizia, their best player, gets injured. And so they have to bring him on because he's the only attack on the bench. They're chasing the game. He's so bad, they take him off for Ken Moncow, who's a centre-back, when they're chasing the game. So he doesn't have a good game. And then he basically, that's him. No one's heard from him since. He's gone.
Is he not selling CBD oil on Twitter?
Well, do you know what? He's incredibly difficult to track down. So we've had kind of email contact via a fixer with Ali.
Right.
But he won't, and he kind of...
Is the fixer George Weah? You know?
If only. The fixer. And so we've had email contact, but he kind of, he tantalisingly doesn't want to talk about it. But I don't know why. If this had happened to me, it would be, I'd be trading on it forever. You'd never hear the end of it, Barry. You wouldn't be able to escape me. If it had happened to any of us, but I don't think it, if it had happened, he maybe doesn't want his life defined by it. Maybe he's got a very normal job now. Maybe, I don't know.
Did you read? There was a journalist, you know, other people have tried to find him, right?
That was our fixer, yeah.
And there was an amazing story. Yeah. And you know, the story is a joke to us. But, like, there is a human in the middle of it. And actually, the story that he wrote was quite a moving one about what happened to Ali Jarr and his family and just the impact of it.
Yeah. And obviously, it is a laugh for us. Because it bloody well should be. Because a man conned his way onto the football pitch in 1996 in the Premier League.
Yeah.
But, yeah, obviously he's affected by it. Graham Souness hasn't spoken. Graham Souness didn't mention it as an autobiography, never really spoke about it. I think Graham Souness feels... we have interviewed Graham Souness. He's spoken for the first time about it. And he's quite magnanimous about it, I think, now. I think you've got to be, really. But obviously, for years, I don't think Graham Souness saw the funny side of it either.
When you're talking to Graham Souness about this, like, could you have jokey small talk before you start the interview?
So Graham Souness, very much, when you ask to interview Graham Souness about Ali Jarr, he very much calls the shots. Not just in the interview, but in... He wasn't going to do it. And then he just told the producer, I'm in London at 2 p.m. tomorrow. I'm willing to talk about Ali Jarr if you'll have me. Dara was in New Zealand and I was out of London as well. So basically, our producer had to sit in a room with Graham Souness and be the first person to talk to him about Ali Jarr. And there's a lot of, on the recording, there's a lot of small talk about Graham Souness being brilliant and winning lots of European Cups before he moves on to discussing Ali Jarr. tell us again about Liverpool winning the European Cup, Graham, and then we'll move on to discuss Ali.
Can I ask, Ben, you're a young'un, how much is this story on your radar? Because I'm guessing it happened before you were born?
Yeah, I would have been one or two, I think, at the time, so... Yeah, but I'm definitely aware of it, but I don't know the nuts and bolts of it, so I definitely will have to be listening. But I just like the idea of Ali now just kind of being like a car salesman somewhere, just living this different life. But I don't know loads about it. But it's weird how Souness has never spoken on it before, no?
Well, you think if it had been Harry Redknapp or if it had been Ron Atkinson or Barry Fry, they'd have been trading on it in after dinner speaking forever.
Yeah.
But yeah. Graham Souness is made differently, and I suppose it must just feel exposing for him, or it must feel kind of, I don't know, he must be too proud about the whole situation.
You would think, because, you know, when there's a pundit on TV, they'll flag up a graphic, Jamie Redknapp won 3 FA Cups with Liverpool. You know, any time Graham Souness is now a pundit, it should be Graham Souness once signed Ali, a bloke who couldn't play football for Southampton.
Yeah.
We got Matt Letitia to talk about as well. Obviously, just to be very clear, we just stayed on the topic of football. We didn't stray into any other areas. I don't know whether this was where Matt Letitia lost his trust in the world, if this moment was when he... But they all kind of... I don't think they all realised quite... It didn't feel so weird in the Southampton dressing room as you would imagine. Do you know what I mean? You would imagine that this was the talk. Who the fuck's this guy? And they were just like, oh, it's another quite bad trialist, I think. That was kind of how they felt. I think it felt incredibly mundane in 1996 for a bloke you didn't know to show up and not be very good on a training ground.
You should probably also add the caveat that at Southampton at that time, there were quite a lot of people who weren't very good at football. Yeah.
I think Matt Letitia being better than other people was like his normal day for him.
I mean, obviously, so much of this is this story is a great way of sort of looking back at football in the 90s, right? And obviously, we all loved football the most when we were 10,
yeah,
right? And do you, do you follow it now in a totally different way?
Yeah, I'm a bit disillusioned with it. In the sense, not in a sense of, you know, I just don't follow it as, it doesn't feel as fun, does it? But I know I sound like I'm 400 years old when I say that, so it's difficult to say it. I do follow it in a different way, because obviously you care a lot more about it when you're a kid. But was the pop music better in the 90s, or is the pop music just
music? It was.
Okay, yeah. Bad example. But it is that feeling of, is it me or was it more fun? It feels like there was a lot more human element. It feels like there was a lot more kind of, everything could go wrong. It feels like the teams that won the league lost a lot more games every season. You know, that feels a lot more fun. But really, you know, I think I'm probably just an old person, aren't I, at the end of the day? And we all prefer the things of our youth.
Yeah, and everything is just an existential midlife crisis.
Exactly. It's probably not Pep Guardiola's fault that I feel disillusioned with life.
Now, we found something you did in The Guardian in 2009, Josh.
Oh, Jesus. Jesus wept.
Producer Joel found a Football Weekly quiz that you wrote in 2009. Well, it took four of you to write 10 questions.
It really is. Well, just to be clear, The Guardian used to have a lot more money. So we were able to have four people doing a quiz before the bottom fell out of the media market. There was four people doing a quiz. Who were the other three?
Yeah. Jacob Steinberg.
Should I try and guess them? Greg Bukowski?
No. Was he previously Greg Ruffley?
Yes. He was Greg Ruffley. Yes, he was Greg Ruffley.
Greg was there, yeah. So Jacob, Greg, you.
Alan Gardner.
No. Sounds like you're talking about Southampton trialists in the 90s now, Alan Gardner. Excellent left midfielder. Somebody called Tom Lutz.
Oh, Tom Lutz. Oh, I love Tom Lutz. Yeah, moved to Australia or America. America he moved to, didn't he?
Lutzy's sort of our man in charge of the US Sports Bureau, I think.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
He's still your colleague, Max. So to say a man called Tom Lutz is a bit of a...
Yeah, they all are except you. You're the only. If you'd really focused on that,
is Greg still there?
Sub-editing.
Yeah.
I love Greg Bukowski. He ran from London to Liverpool while I was there. Sorry, I've disappeared in more nostalgia.
No, that's all right. Anyway, should we play the Football Weekly quiz?
Oh, God.
I guess it's a multiple choice.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we should ask you know, you, Josh, or if everyone should just shout if they know the answer. I mean, Barry, you really... Barry, shout if you know the answer. You have quite an advantage.
Was it themed?
The theme is Football Weekly. Like, it's a quiz on the Guardian website about Football Weekly. Oh, so it's perfect for here. Yeah. Question one, everybody. When was the first Football Weekly broadcast? Your choices are...
2006, June.
Glenn Denning, 1-0 up. World Cup 2006.
I remember listening to that episode. I listened to that when I was working at...
It was recorded in what can only be described as a wardrobe.
I think there was a beer tasting, or there was a German beer tasting or something between Barry and James Richardson. And I thought, this is the podcast. It was like the first podcast I'd ever listened to, I think.
Who does... Question two. Who does James Richardson support?
Roma.
Correct. 2-0 to Barry. Okay.
The whitewash.
You're doing really well here, Barry. We found your specialist subject. Sean Ingle, question three. Sean Ingle coined which famous catchphrase?
Crouchy's getting his nachos.
This is incredible.
Three, really good. Come on, Josh, you wrote this. You wrote at least one question of this quiz, Josh.
Peter Crouch was subsequently asked in an interview by James Richardson about the story of when he famously was ordering nachos in some fast food takeaway and was telling everyone present that Crouchy's getting his nachos. And while he didn't dispute that it may have happened, he denied any knowledge of it.
Excellent. Question four, I think we're on. Which of these people hasn't guest hosted Football Weekly? Ken Early.
He has.
Rob Curling.
He has.
Paul Doyle. Colin Murray.
Paul Doyle.
Colin Murray.
Colin Murray is the correct answer. Yeah.
Barry, this is incredible stuff.
Really good here. Question five.
His podcast. I mean,
The Life and Times of Barry Glendenning. Basically,
I'm really enjoying this quiz.
First time Barry's enjoyed my work.
Exactly, isn't it? So funny. It's so rare on a pub quiz you go, and round five, everyone, is the Guardian Football Weekly. Imagine when it happens, Baz. Question six, I think we're on. What is Sid Lowe's real name?
Sid Lowe.
Rob.
Simon Lowe.
Correct. 1 point for Johnny Lou. Really good. His first name is Simon.
It's on his accreditation. I shared a room with him in Qatar, and it's on his accreditation as Simon Lowe.
To which institution did Man of the People Barry Glendenning once belong? The Army, boarding school, Riverdance or prison?
Boarding school.
Yeah, okay. Which area of Germany does Ralf Honigstein hail from?
Bavaria.
Correct. What was Barry Glendenning seen doing in an Austrian pub during Euro 2008, which wouldn't be done in the UK? Correct. Oh. Well done, Josh. You're on the board.
More my knowledge of law than my knowledge of Football Weekly.
I'm glad that's all it was.
The relief on Barry's face is unbelievable.
Which of these pod members has not written a book? Jonathan Wilson, I'll give over. Ralf Honigstein, Scott Murray, or John Ashdown?
John Ashdown.
Correct. Finally, fill in the blank in this James Richardson quote. The biggest title challenge since, insert player here, tried to write his autobiography.
Danny Shittu.
Correct. Danny Shittu. Did you write that question?
I remember that. I don't know where that's come from in my mind.
Really good. Really good. But it is there, isn't it? On Barry's lookalikes, Simon says, for the new bi-weekly feature, People Who Look Like Barry, we started watching Traitors recently. Rayanne from Series 1 shares a more than passing resemblance to Barry. Also, my cousin's girlfriend, Michael, looks like Barry, but none of her family know who he is, so it's lost on them. Matt says, is Barry going to hand back all those NHS contracts he got from the government?
Yeah, that is slightly alarming, how the likeness between myself and that bloke. I wish he had his money, if not his morals.
If you put a white T-shirt, and if you put a white T-shirt and a red cap on him, I reckon he's a dead ringer for Hank Hill. Have you ever had that?
Yes. Have you ever had Hank Hill, Barry?
No.
Okay. Jacek, I think that's how I pronounce it, says the Swedish Minister of Justice does look a bit like Barry, and he does, but you know, you'll have to look it up. So look, more of those, please. And finally, Maya says, hello, Football Weekly panel. I finally had a Football Weekly themed dream. In the dream, Max was my stepdad, and I was staying at his house for the week. I woke up from a nap on the couch to find Max and Kate Middleton deep in conversation at a table. Apparently Max was a journalist working on a big tell-all interview with Kate. I left the room to give them some privacy and went into the kitchen where Barry was preparing them tea. Unclear whether he was a butler or some sort of household staff or just hanging out. Unfortunately, I woke up before the story could progress, so we'll never know what his role was or what Kate revealed in her tell-all. I should add that Max is a bit too young to be my stepdad, but I would begrudgingly accept him should something happen to my parents' marriage. Love the pod. Keep up the good work. Best wishes, Maya. Thank you, Maya. Appreciate your email and apologies
so
for
that's where Kate
seeping
is.
Into your subconscious. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hanging out with us, drinking tea.
Exactly. if you have any dreams about us, that's a very self-indulgent question, footballweekly@theguardian.com. And anything else you'd like to get in touch with us about. 53 Minutes, the podcast is out now. New episodes each week available on Global Player or wherever you get your podcasts. So thank you, Josh. Thanks for coming on.
It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been an absolute joy.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody else. Thanks, Ben.
Cheers, Max.
Thanks, Johnny.
Thanks.
Cheers, Baz.
Thank you.
Football Weekly is produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Max Sarnes.
This is The Guardian.